And I'm now joined on the line here by June Tinsley. She's head of advocacy from Barnardo's. She's going to be talking about the increase in child poverty in Ireland over the last decade. A very good morning to you, June. You're very welcome and thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah. First of all, June, may I ask you just to briefly define what exactly is meant by consistent poverty in children? Like, how is it arrived at or defined? For example, some who may not necessarily be homeless per se, yet they are still living in poverty.
Yeah, very true. The formal definition of a child living in consistent poverty or a household living in consistent poverty means that their income is 60% below the average income, and that they also experience two of the 11 deprivation indicators. And that sounds very complex, but I suppose it really gives a flavour of the fact that it means a family who is unable to have any social life, as a child who doesn't have a warm winter coat, who doesn't have adequate meals during the day, who is the family's unable to repair furniture in the house. So it kind of covers a breadth of issues. But as you rightly state, there are many families who are experiencing poverty who wouldn't even be classified under that clear definition.
Right. And what are the 11 deprivation indicators? Or is that too much to go through?
Well, I suppose I've alluded to four of them there.
All right. Okay.
It is quite technical. All right. I won't bore your listeners about it.
All right. Okay. No problem.
I suppose from a Barnardo's point of view, what we're seeing is that the statistics are showing that year on year, the rate of child poverty has gone up quite significantly. Back in 2007, it was around 76,000 children living in consistent poverty, and now we're at 132,000.
So,
admittedly, there's been a significant recession, but now that we're through the recession, it's still quite alarming, the volume of children living in consistent poverty.
Yeah, well, nearly 3 in 5 of lone parents' households with one or more children are experiencing deprivation. And that's 58%. Very worrying, isn't it?
Very much so, yes. And yeah. I suppose we kind of are realising that it works out at maybe 3 in every classroom of children. And if you can think about if there was 3 children in every classroom who had the same disability or same illness, there would be an absolute national outcry about the fact that it was so prevalent. And unfortunately, there isn't that same national outcry about child poverty, even though it can affect so many aspects of their lives, including their health, their education, their whole well-being. And there isn't such a strong rallying cry to do anything about it.
Yes. You've mentioned already, according to the statistics over the last decade, the number of children in poverty has increased from 76,000 in 2007 to roughly 132,000 in 2015 and probably still now today, with also a 400% increase in child homelessness since 2014. In your opinion, June, how has it come to this?
Well, I suppose the homelessness crisis, what we do know is that it's been kind of a bubbling issue that's been going bubbling throughout the recession because of the lack of construction that went on, and now we're living with the repercussions of that. And I also think that the reality is a lot of landlords are choosing either to sell up or are choosing to not rent their properties to low-income families because there's such a supply issue that there's plenty of viewers of private rented accommodation, so the landlords can pick and choose which tenants they choose to lease their property out to. And as a result, it's many families on low incomes that are suffering the burden that they can't pay the rents, and as a result are tipping into homelessness.
Yes, and also the social welfare rent allowance limits have been far too low over the years.
Yeah, they have not kept pace. And as a result, that's, I suppose, one of the primary reasons that families are tipping into homelessness. Rents are going up, and the social welfare supports are not keeping pace with that. And subsequently, families are losing their tenancies.
Yes, of course. Yeah, although the government have done something about, you know, the landlords who are taking advantage insofar as they have to wait at least 2 years now, isn't it, before they can charge a rent increase?
Yes, yeah. To be fair to the government, there have been a wide number of measures to try and stem and reduce the volume of families becoming homelessness, such as you said, that kind of rent pressure zones that were introduced. Now it is against the law for landlords to discriminate against social welfare tenants, and there's different measures that they're trying to introduce. I suppose from Bernardo's point of view, we just believe that there needs to be a whole scale introduction of new social housing onto the market, because if we're pumping money into providing emergency accommodation or providing supports for the rental accommodation, then that's still not sufficient. Neither of those options are going to solve this problem. Supply is the problem, and we need to invest in social housing construction, similar to what we would have done in the 30s and 40s. And yet Ireland is lagging far, far behind in terms of constructing new social housing.
Okay, and getting back to the main problem at issue here that we are discussing, child poverty in Ireland, like, given the opportunity in government, what would you be suggesting, apart from the construction situation, to rectify the situation?
Well, certainly some of the things we were flagging to the government in terms of Budget 2018 was we wanted to see greater investment in the childcare sector, and $20 million was given, but I suppose it's still not enough in order to ensure appropriate quality is available right throughout that sector. We know that a child's early years are just so important for their development, that gaining access to quality early years education is just so important for their development. And yet Ireland still has very fragmented childcare sector. I think another issue that Bernardo's was raised for the budget was to ensure greater availability of family support services right across the communities for families and parents who are struggling or who are having difficulties, that there would be appropriate supports for them in order to enhance their own parenting capacity and confidence, which will then in turn improve child outcomes. And then our long-standing recommendations in the area of health and education were related to the fact that children are frequently languishing on waiting lists to get access to public health services, and that certainly needs to be remedied in order to ensure that a child gets timely interventions. We know childhood is so time limited that if a health issue goes on undetected or unsupported, it's just going to affect all aspects of their development.
Okay. There's an article on your website that mentions many wealthy Irish individuals and institutions have been using offshore accounts to avoid paying tax. Are there any stats to back that up, to back up the shortfall in lost tax revenue? And how much in euro are we talking about here?
Well, I suppose we issued that press release on foot of all the release of the Paradise Papers this week. And it was just to flag that in contrast to the millions that individuals and corporations have siphoned off to offshore accounts or have accrued through the, admittedly is legal, it does mean that there's a lot less money in the exchequer to fund much needed public services. And we know that Budget 2018 really only had a wriggle room of $1 billion. Which is not very much money when you need to replenish much-needed public services, which were decimated and are still suffering as a result. And I suppose minimal enough investment, for example, our proposal around free primary education, it only costs $103 million to guarantee that every child at primary level will be given free primary education. And that wasn't advanced because there isn't enough money in the exchequer. And yet there are corporations and individuals who are avoiding paying full range of tax.
Right, so what you're saying is that the loss of revenue in relation to the avoidance of tax could be pumped into the child.
Yes, the Revenue Commissioners have tried to pursue this and have in the last couple of years accrued, I think it's over $1 billion in targeting offshore operations. But there's still plenty of activities undertaken that they are pursuing in order to avoid paying full tax. And as I said, I know these are legal measures, but still the moral element to the story is that the Exchequer is significantly underfunded as a result of these measures being pursued.
Okay. And what would you suggest or recommend our government do to prevent investment in offshore accounts and prevent the avoidance of tax payments in Ireland?
Well, I think the revenue seriously needs to consider what additional powers it needs in order to close any tax loopholes and things like that, revenue that they need from through taxation. Ireland has a very, very low tax base, and as a result, we need to increase that, and we have to do that by ensuring that there is tax loopholes are all cut off in order to ensure that the money for those who are tax resident in Ireland pays their fair share.
Okay. And is all of this just an Irish problem, Joan? Is it happening in some other EU countries?
Oh, it's happening right around the world, I believe.
Right. Okay.
My understanding is because the nature of international companies declare tax residencies in different places that money can be moved around those locations for tax purposes, and I think that is the downside to having the international companies right across the world.
Right, okay. Tell us briefly, Joan, about Barnardo's in terms of helping with child poverty. Just briefly.
Yeah, well, certainly some of the... We have 40 projects right across the country, and a lot of our projects work directly hands-on with parents, work in trying to improve their own parenting capacity, improving their parenting ability, making them needs of their child. We work directly with children, trying to improve their own social and emotional development. And I suppose all these aspects are so important for a child's resilience and their ability to kind of overcome some of the challenges that they're experiencing, including poverty, in order so that they can thrive in all aspects of their life going forward.
Yes, I have to agree. Like, I mean, childhood is short, and experiences that children go through do shape the adults that they become and the kind of life they live. And those in poverty can very easily be excluded from opportunities in future life. They may also suffer like short and long-term health issues. They miss out on educational and career opportunities. And indeed, what we term as a happy childhood, certainly it's a very important issue that I have to say needs to be addressed as top priority.
Yes, well, thank you for the support, because it certainly is something we need and see at the coalface when we are working directly with families who are struggling day to day due to whatever circumstances they're living in, and often it's the child's needs who are not being met, and yet we know that interventions can be so effective for children to help them grow and thrive and to overcome whatever adversities they're experiencing in order to ensure that they can have a very fulfilling.
Okay, just before we finish up, if anybody is interested or wants to check up on anything in relation to child poverty, you have a website address for Barnardo's.
Yeah,
Barnardo's.ie. Yeah. Barnardo's.ie. And you're also on social media with Facebook and Twitter accounts, I assume.
Yes. And also Instagram as well.
Okay, June, thank you very much for joining us today. Very interesting, and hopefully we can talk again on some other issues very shortly.
No problem. Thank you.
You're most welcome. All the best, and have a great day.